Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. If y'all are like us, you've exhausted everywhere else you find your documentaries on the strange and unusual and the fun. And if you like grand conspiracies and more breakaway societies, paranormal, ancient civilizations like we all do, and UFOs, well, we've found the place right at your fingertips, folks. You can stream videos from anywhere, from your living room or on the go, with access to over 7,000 titles, all on Gaia.com, G-A-I-A. Now, you can get this for a monthly plan of $9.95 a month. Your first month will only be 99 cents. Now, there is a three-month plan and an annual plan. So, if you're into the things that we're into, and judging by what you're listening to, you are, start enjoying Gaia.com. Expand your perspective even more. G-A-I-A.com.
And this episode is made possible by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and it is spectacular. I got my package. Cam, you've gotten your package.
Yep.
And I can't believe how good it is. Mm-hmm. They've established with over 150 local farms and fisheries and ranches across the United States. Their produce is sourced from farms that only practice regenerative farming.
Yeah.
Their beef, their chicken, and their pork come from responsibly raised animals only, which is important to me. Their seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. And because they ship everything with the exact amount of ingredients for each recipe, they're reducing food waste.
Yeah, there's not a lot of waste.
I mean, there's a lot of wasted food in the United States.
Yes.
These studies show that like almost 40% of the food we buy is thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
Happens a lot. It doesn't happen much at our house anymore. Happened a lot more when the kids are younger.
Yeah.
Now they eat everything.
Yeah.
But they have two-person plans. They have four-person plans. And they deliver to 99% of the United States. And I'm telling you, man, I can't stress how fresh this stuff is.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's surprising. It really was surprising.
I mean, when I had my recipe, what I had was, and if you go over to Instagram or Facebook, you can see the pictures of me preparing it. Mm-hmm. I had these pimento cheeseburgers. And I mean, I was shocked when I opened up the box. It had fresh parsnips. I've never even had a parsnip before. It had fresh carrots in there. Right? I had fresh carrots in there. And you had to grill those. And then it came with the ground beef. It gave you all the seasoning. And my favorite part was making the homemade pimento cheese. It came with a block of cheese. I had to grate it all out. I had to cut up the peppers, mix it with some mayonnaise, and mix in the special spices that it came with. Made my own homemade pimento cheese. Put it on the potato bun. And no jokes, it was really good. And I think most of that is due to the fact that this is fresh ingredients.
Yes.
It's not like canned vegetables. These are fresh vegetables. You could tell.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of y'all right now are probably like, well, I don't want pimento cheeseburgers. Well, look, I'm going to come to the rescue. I'm going to tell you what they're going to have this week. This week, you jump on it right now. If you like lamb, beef, and mushroom stew on the two-person plan, winner, winner, they got it. If you like seared chicken with crispy capers and blood orange sauce, winner, winner, they got it. They even got a roasted broccoli and fagiola sarda. It's a pasta, pepper and olive salsa and a pasta. But if you like the family plan, folks, they got seared steaks and mashed potatoes and catfish katsu also. But that's this week. Look, I'll go crazy. I'm going to go crazy Blue Apron style. We're going to talk about next week. Next week, smoky pork burgers, Tangelo and honey glazed salmon in the two-person plan. I can't. Blackened chicken and rice is one of them.
That sounds good.
This sounds really good. Moroccan spice lamb and beef tangerine with brown rice and pita chips. I'm going crazy because I've never got to try these things.
Well,
and not only do I get to try them, I get to make them.
That's right. And, you know, and they don't repeat the same things but once a year. And so if you eat something from Blue Apron, you really like it, you save the card, you can make it again on your own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's affordable. It's less than $10 per meal. They have a big variety. They're flexible. You can tell them each week what you want. Or if you want, you can just let Blue Apron surprise you. Don't pick nothing. Let's just see what happens. You can do it that way. It's easy. Each meal comes with step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in less than 40 minutes.
Yep.
So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/expanded. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/expanded. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Cam, are you ready to start this show?
Let's do this.
Hey,
out there, amigos. And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. That's right. Time to start the week. It's me, Cam Hale, Esimaron, and sitting across the table from me, this fellow over here he's always fiddling with stuff, folks. Right now, he's got a couple of batteries in his hand. He just keeps rolling them around. I'm going to get him one of those little fidget devices. It's the Filio, the fidget Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? We're recording this a little early. In fact, when you're hearing this, I'm actually going to be in the mountains somewhere at an undisclosed location, snowboarding with my family.
Drinking.
Oh, yeah. Living the good life.
Don't slam into a tree, dum-dum.
No, I wear a helmet, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you need to wear one walking around.
Dude, I've been snowboarding since I was real young, and I don't know what reason.
Bragging montage.
When you're younger, you don't think you need a helmet. And I'm like, nah, I don't need no helmet. What are you, crazy? And then at some point, I remember falling and hitting my head on one of those well-groomed courses.
On a green.
Where it gets like, I think it was like a blue, and I was going way too fast. And you know where they groom it, and then it gets hard, so it looks like it's soft, but it's as hard as concrete.
It's like glass. Yeah.
It's me, my brother, and his friend Cody, and there was like a little, I don't know what, somebody had made like a little kicker in the path.
I remember
like,
this story. And,
and I hit it, and I came down on my head, and I swear to God, my head hurt for like 2 days. Ever since then, I'm like, I think we were in Banff, Alberta. I hurt my head so bad, I literally had a headache for like 2 days. I was like, that's it. I'm buying a helmet. I've worn a helmet ever since.
It's not like when you was a kid running as fast as you could, looking down at your new shoes and run into the tractor.
Yeah, I remember
first.
Doing that. Yeah. I cracked my skull doing that.
That explains a whole hell of a lot.
So as you get older, you realize I don't care what I look like. I don't care about looking cool. I just don't want to crack my dome on the runs.
You know
anymore.
What the easiest way to do it is?
Don't go. Yeah.
That's
but I
me.
Like it. It's fun.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I like too that's fun, but I'm not doing it. You know, I'm like, I'm sure I would really love doing coke and running around with a bunch of hookers and driving fast, but I don't do that.
I would. I just can't afford it.
Oh, so, all right, bud. Like we said, we're recording this early. We're going to throw this out. We're going to have some interesting stuff. We got some fun news stories. I think I've got an interesting segment you folks are really going to enjoy. But you were telling me something. We were talking about something medical, and he was like, hold on, don't get going. I got to tell you something. So what were you going to lay
well,
on
Well, you
me?
Know how for every show almost I like to bring up these robot uprising and artificial intelligence. So there was a recent article posted on Gizmodo about what happens when the computer that keeps you alive can also put you in jail.
What?
Okay, yeah, check this out. So there's a guy named Ross Compton, and last September, his Ohio home caught on fire. The story he told police was that he grabbed a few things and rushed out of the house, hurling essentials out of a bedroom window that he had to break open with his cane before scrambling out himself. Now, the police, though, were suspicious. Compton's few things had included a computer, a suitcase packed with clothes, and the charger for the external heart pump that he needed to survive. Now, it seems unlikely that a 59-year-old man with a pacemaker and a heart pump would have been able to gather all those things and make it out of a burning house alive, they say. So the police didn't believe him, and they needed to figure out a way how to make these arson charges that they wanted to charge him with stick. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it was his pacemaker that did him in.
How's that?
Check this out. After obtaining a search warrant for all the electronic data stored in Compton's pacemaker.
Oh, no.
The police determined that his device did not corroborate his story. In fact, they were able to precisely detect that his heart rate, his pacer demanded, and cardiac rhythms all suggested that Compton had not been running around, bundling up all his prized possessions, and he was not leaving in a hurry as his story went.
Wow.
As the house went up in flames. Can you believe that?
So it told on him. So it's one of those things, they never saw a rise in pulse or a rise in cardiac
activity.
That's
right. Activity. And they, so much so, they said last month, with the help of his pacemaker data, he was indicted on charges of aggravated arson and insurance fraud.
Wow.
So privacy issues are moving under our skin. Now, the devices that keep us alive and healthy apparently can also be used against us in the court of law. Now, this isn't the only case. In another case back in March 2015, a Florida woman traveled to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where she stayed at her boss's home. The next day, the police were called to the home, where they found overturned furniture, a knife, and a bottle of vodka. Now, according to the woman, Janine,
that sounds like a good time, bud.
Janine Risley, she told police that she'd been sleeping and that she had been woken up around midnight and sexually assaulted by a man in his 30s wearing boots.
I'd like to retract that last statement. That doesn't sound like a good time, bud.
However, Risley was wearing her Fitbit band at the time.
Uh-oh, yeah?
She initially said that the Fitbit she had was lost in the struggle, but police found it in a hallway, and when they downloaded its activity, the device became a witness against her. Unknowingly, Risley handed the username and password for her Fitbit account over to the police, and what they found contradicted her account of what happened that night. Local police also thought it was odd that there were no footprints in the snow around the home, and after Risley's boss, who was unnamed in the news report, offered what police considered further incriminating evidence, telling police that Risley was about to lose her position with the company, local authorities charged her with false reports to law enforcement, false alarms to public safety, and tampering with evidence for upending all the furniture. Now, it goes on to talk about how while you can delete your Facebook account or leave your Fitbit at home if you're going somewhere you'd rather not be tracked, but you simply can't turn off your pacemaker.
Mm-mm.
Not only does deactivating a pacemaker require a doctor, in some cases, doctors refuse to do it. So what happens when privacy violations are committed by devices inside of us? Devices that we can't turn off, you know, with these settings. It's an interesting point. So you can you imagine it? Everybody, you know, the Fitbit is all the rage. They can go down there and download the activity and be like, no, you didn't have an unusual heart. If you were being raped, we would be able to tell from your Fitbit.
Yes.
Same thing with the guy that's claimed he was running around trying to get out of that fire.
I never knew that you could get that kind of information from a pacemaker.
Well, they said that
wow,
this is a new thing that these cunning lawyers have figured out a way to do. And they're saying that this is going to just continue in the future. They can track you with your phone, all these electronic devices. You're not thinking about it. There's cameras everywhere. You have a personal device. The more and more stuff that's out there, man, it's going to be much harder to come up with these stories.
Wow.
So how clever is that?
That's pretty clever.
I'm wondering if they're going to take it a step further. Like maybe in the future, like a bill collector says, hey, man, if you don't pay your bill by this month, we're turning that pacemaker off.
What was that Repo Men? Wasn't that the one?
I think it was something like that.
There was a movie like that.
Wasn't it like Jude Law or somebody was in that?
They would go and get your organs if you missed a payment.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But this is a real thing.
That's crazy, right? Like, if you don't pay it up, we're just going to go, or what, we're going to stall it every few seconds so it brings you to the point of death, but we're not going to let you die. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to scare you into, and then they're going to let you come back. You're like, see, we can do that whenever we want.
Yeah, well, you know, say that somebody's got something electronic like a pacemaker or whatever, and they're like holding someone hostage in a house. The SWAT team gathered around. Can't they just send out like, well, we're just going to shut you off for a while, and then we'll storm in there, gather you, and then we'll turn you back on.
It's coming.
It's coming, right? They said a lot of people don't realize that there's microchips in almost everything now, and even in like prosthetics. People that have heard, sometimes there's computer chips inside there.
A prosthetic arm where you're just like slapping yourself the whole time. Make it attack.
No, but they can take data, metadata off these objects and tell if you know you have a story of something happening. They could be able to
well, where you've been, track it, the whole thing. That's really exactly. Wild. I never thought of these.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's. I tell you, I don't even want to think about that. I'm not. We're not going. The robots are going to rise up, kill us all before they can track us anyway. So it doesn't really matter. That's just the way the world's going to be. I've got an interesting story here. Now, we had posted this on our Facebook page, and this comes from our good buddy Mike over there at the Texas Cryptid Hunter. He'd actually posted this, folks. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's a story that was actually written back July 20th of 1960, and it's an account from Sherman, Texas, about a gorilla was reported seen. What they said was a huge ape at Blue Creek. I want to read you this because it's something that's going to be right up all of our alley. If you like Bigfoot, if you like these stories, and this old, you're going to really enjoy this. And it starts off, it says, Blue Creek, is there a gorilla loose near this small community? It says, J.O. Conrad, his wife and son, who live here 3 miles east of Sherman on Highway 82, say they saw a 7-foot gorilla or some kind of monster Monday night near their home. His story came to light only Friday. Now, mind you, this is back in 1960, folks. The animal has been reported seen near Bell's by one other person. Some people merely shake their heads and smile at the story while others stand behind Conrad's report. Gorilla or not, the citizens of Blue Creek are keeping their doors locked tight and firearms handy. Conrad said he had just gone to bed Monday night about 10:30 or 11. Here's his quote. I was smoking a cigarette when the dog started barking. I looked out the east window and saw him. He looked to be 7 feet tall and about 3 feet wide across the back. He stood upright, but hunched over. At first glimpse, Conrad said he thought it might be a man walking through his yard. He says, then I saw it was too big to be a man. I jumped out of bed and got my flashlight and gun. Now, Miss Conrad, and their son, James, who was 13, watched the creature from the bedroom window. Conrad said he stepped off his front porch toward the animal and fired three times. He says, I know I hit him at least once, but he didn't even flinch. That's when I went after my shotgun. Now, Miss Conrad called the sheriff's office in Sherman, and deputies warned against shooting the animal, afraid a bullet would cause an attack. He says, I fired the shotgun over his head, but he didn't run, just shuffled off to the east side of the highway. I jumped in my car and followed. I got a real good look at him in my headlights while I was following him. He looked black as coal. He was real hairy except for his face. I was about 20 feet from him when I shot, and I didn't try to get any closer. I was scared. Now, all the way to the Blue Creek bottom, a few hundred yards east of the community, Conrad said that the animal swayed and shuffled slowly along on his back legs. His front legs were just hanging down and swinging around. Says the animal went into the underbrush at the creek, and Conrad said he gave up the search, afraid to follow the beast into the brush. Now, Miss Curtis Wilson, who lives about 100 yards east of Conrad, came across the highway, said she and her husband were awakened shortly before Conrad saw the animal. And she says that we heard something rattling around in the shrubbery beside the house, and our two dogs were going crazy. Miss Wilson goes on to say that then we heard something thump against the house, and the dogs hushed, just like they'd been turned off. Now, when her husband went outside, Miss Wilson said that the dogs were cowering in a corner on the porch and shaking like somebody had whipped them. At the same time, Miss Wilson said the Wilson's cows behind the house began an uproar. Said the Wilson's first thought was it was a wolf. She says, then we heard Mr. Conrad shooting and my husband got his deer rifle. But by the time he got out to the highway, whatever it was had gone into the creek bottom there in the brush. Now, Miss Wilson said most of the people living near the community had kept their doors locked since this happened. And Conrad said his wife was so scared that she did not go to sleep the rest of the night and had to have medical treatment the next day. W.B. Thompson, that lives at 716 South Burdett in Sherman, was working the same night at an all-night station in the Star community between Bells and Denison. And he said a man drove into the station for gas and told him he had just seen a large, strange-looking animal along the roadside near Bell's, and Thompson didn't get the man's name. Now, Conrad said that he started to follow the beast in his car, and another car came down the highway approaching the animal from behind, and that fellow must have seen the gorilla because he threw on his brakes and almost stopped at the side of the animal. Then he stepped on it and got out of there. I thought he would stop to help me, but he must have been scared, too. Now, Grayson's sheriff's deputy, James Spa, answered Miss Conrad's call for help. And he said that as far as he's concerned, Conrad definitely saw something, and it wasn't a man. They say next morning, Conrad took his wife to the doctor. When he returned around noon, he could find no tracks on the hard, dry ground. And he says this, that some men who work around here had dug a wrecked car over the spot where I saw the thing standing. And they said there weren't any tracks left. So apparently there was a car turned over. They moved it, and so it had kind of roughed up the ground. Nothing had really happened there. Now, Conrad said that he'd never seen the gorilla before. He said, I've looked in a dictionary the next morning and found one, and I know I saw a gorilla. He said, at the suggestions of a possible hunt for the beast in the Blue Creek bottom, Conrad said this, with that gorilla down there, not me, buddy. I'm scared. So that's where he left it off. So that tale, I like the way he wraps it up at the end.
Yeah.
He had never seen a gorilla. 1960. I've never seen a gorilla before. You know, you got to think about it. It's not near as free-flowing information as we have now in magazines and books and all this.
We probably never saw one in real life is probably what
he means. Well, the way he's talking about, he said he had never seen one. He had to get a book to find it. He had to get a dictionary to find one.
Yeah, I guess it's
so
possible.
He looked, well, you think about it. What use would a man up there in Sherman have to do
with
a gorilla?
People don't know Sherman is on the Texas-Oklahoma border.
Yeah.
North Central Texas.
There would be no reason for him to know what a gorilla looked like back in 1960. Involve his life. He probably didn't go to the zoo. He didn't
care.
He's just a hardworking fella.
Yeah.
So when he says, I saw a gorilla, and he said it was 7 foot tall, he followed it in his car. The odd thing to me is he said its front legs were hanging down. Well, is it because the arms are so long on these reported Sasquatch sightings that it would look like legs? Also, they're big. He doesn't say he saw feet. He just said its front legs, that it was shuffling along.
Yeah, you're right.
So could it have been a bear?
Yeah.
If it looked like legs and it was shuffling along, but he still swears he saw a gorilla. Its face, its skin, the whole thing.
So either it was an escaped gorilla,
yeah,
and he was wrong about the size, or it was a Sasquatch.
Exactly.
That's the only two possibilities it could be, right?
Exactly. Yeah, pretty much.
Here's something you won't believe. What scientists found when they drilled the world's deepest hole.
Whoa, wait a minute. I don't believe this.
Now, we've talked about Mel's hole on the show, and yeah, that was a huge hit. And this is kind of like that. Many people believe the human race knows more about distant galaxies and alien planets located light years away from Earth than what lies beneath the surface of our planet.
I'm one of those people.
Curiously, it took Voyager 1 spacecraft nearly 26 years to exit our solar system, which is about the same amount of time scientists on Earth needed to penetrate 12 kilometers into our planet's surface. After more than two decades, scientists created the COLA Super Deep Borehole and a drill depth of more than 7.5 miles. The COLA Super Deep Borehole reached 12,262 meters, or 40,230 feet, in 1989, becoming the deepest artificial point on our planet. Now, to put that in perspective, the COLA Super Deep Borehole descends further than the deepest point of the ocean, which lies at nearly 6.8 miles, or 11 kilometers. So, what did the scientists find down there? Well, after 26 years of intensive drilling efforts, experts found there's a lot of water down there. Scientists discovered hot, mineralized water almost everywhere down the drilling path. But not only is there water down there, scientists discovered the Earth has gas. Scientists found helium, hydrogen, nitrogen, and even carbon dioxide from microbes all along the borehole. One of the greatest surprises was that experts found there is no basalt under the continent's granite. Scientists believed that at 9,000 meters, the granite would give way to basalt, and to their surprise, it doesn't. Furthermore, scientists discovered that there are actual fossils in granite located 6,700 meters below the surface. In addition to the above, scientists found that temperatures at the bottom of the hole reached a staggering 180 degrees Celsius, officially too hot to continue, earning it the nickname the Door to Hell. But perhaps what's more impressive is the fact that scientists estimate the distance to the center of our planet is nearly 4,000 miles. Or 6,400 kilometers. Turns out, 6,500 kilometers isn't anywhere close to what scientists managed to drill through. Barely scratches the surface. So, even though this is really, really far, 6.8 miles, that's nothing compared to going to the center of the Earth. It's 4,000 miles to
that's
get to just
nothing.
The center.
That's nothing.
So, after they found all these fossils and microfossils and stuff, they basically capped up the hole, and they're not studying it anymore. And if you care, you want to know where this hole is, it's in Murmansk Oblast, Russia.
You know why they capped it off, don't you?
No, why?
Because Earth is flat. They were going to drill through the bottom of it.
You're probably right.
Yeah. So that's the reason they quit doing it. Earth is only like 7 miles thick, so they almost drilled through the bottom because it's flat. It's like a plate.
Yeah, so who knew that they even had this super hole?
I did, of course.
You did?
I'm up on all this stuff.
No, okay.
Kidding?
Well, I had no idea.
I've got you something else here that I'm going to use to talk about what I'm going to be talking about in our segment. This is a tale that happened in Manhattan, there in New York City, back in November of 1989. And it's a witness talks about seeing a tall, thin, black-eyed female humanoid. This lawn posted this. Now, this is very interesting. It says, the witness was lying in bed, unable to sleep, when a very bright white light entered the room. Then three or four humanoids entered her bedroom, apparently through the walls, and stood by her bed. That sounds like a fun night, right?
Yeah.
Said these beings were described as 5 foot tall, wide and heavy set, with large heads, large pupilless eyes, no ears or hair, with dark bluish skin. It almost sounded like they were describing me. Okay, it says their hands were very large with thick fingers and nails. They wore, get a load of this, white coats down to their ankles. She was asked to come with them and followed them down the street. There, she saw a group of about 30 women walking towards the river. All appeared to be in a trance. She felt drawn to the river, and once there, she observed three brightly lit, hovering, disc-shaped objects. It says a tall, thin female humanoid with huge black eyes and wearing a flowing black robe appeared to be in charge. She was called by this being and asked to perform a test-type task. She says the next thing she said is she found herself standing by the foot of her bed with the short, stocky being struggling with her in an attempt to give her an injection. And this is one of the last things she recalls, is a long needle was inserted into her shoulder.
Ouch.
And a white substance was removed.
Hmm.
Blarcy.
Yeah, right. Remember that? Yeah.
I come in peace.
I come in peace.
You go in pieces.
Yeah. So I thought that's insane. So it is. It's kind of like a. I instantly thought of the monkeys in The Wizard of Oz, where the witch sends them out and she grabs them and they bring them back. Right. That's the first thing. The flying.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That I was thinking of is it almost sounds like the woman, of course, is in charge, sending these things, whoever these little beings are, out to get them. But the reason I brought that up, folks, is we're going to take a quick break. And we come back, I'm going to be touching on, of course, some Men in Black sightings. And I'm going to get into some odd, these are some, you know, I would say more odd than normal sightings that have to do with Men in Black. And even some Women in Black sightings. We're going to kind of touch on that too, folks. So stick around. On the other side of this, we're going to have a little fun. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back, and we're going to dive into this. We've talked about a few Men in Black sightings in the past, and it's been the past, a few years ago and all that stuff. There's some very interesting things that I didn't touch on, that I want to touch on just a few of these stories that, like we've talked in the past, it's really strange to me that, like when we see Sasquatch, you get all these Sasquatch tales, like what we've covered, creek bottoms, in the mountains, they're in the woods. You don't get all these Sasquatch sightings like somebody walking down in Manhattan, like where the news story, where somebody sees a Bigfoot run down an alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now they see coyotes in cities, correct?
Yeah.
They've even got videos and pictures of mountain lions in cities, like they're in there hunting and, you know, whatever. So you see these things happening. You don't ever see Bigfoot in cities. So it's almost like he sticks to his area, right? His area is the woods, the swamps. It's where he stays. Men in Black don't have that area. You would think that they only stick to, like, maybe the outskirts, or they only stick to these towns or this city, or they're only right in here, right in there. No. They see them at different areas. You may see them a week or two after a sighting. You may see them a year after a sighting. You may only see them when you've been just doing some research into the topic and digging real deep. You may see them. So they don't really follow any rules. And we don't only see them here in the U.S. They see them in other countries. They're also different. I mean, they're also female. I mean, it doesn't always fit the story. And I guess that's the strangest thing about it is, like when we start doing a few tales about the black-eyed adults that we've covered, it's always supposed to be black-eyed kids, and all of a sudden they've branched out. Like it's only supposed to be Bigfoot in the woods. Now there's Dogman, you know? So you start having these strange... I like these things to be compartmentalized. I like them to stick to their own, stay in their own lane. Men in Black don't do that. So today I'm going to be talking about some of the more interesting cases of Men in Black encounters. And like I said, even some that have to do with the ladies in black. Now, starting this thing off is none other than a story from Mr. John Keel. And of course, the readers of the Mothman Prophecies may remember a J.P. Farrow, and a radio personality there at the Long Island station, the WBAB. Now, it talks about her, and like, I don't remember what chapter it is, but it talks about her in the book, and she talks about this unnerving experience she had with a man in this Cadillac, this black Cadillac. So, I'm going to talk about this stuff, like hers. Of course, like in 1967, of course, John Keel was investigating the case of Jane, which was like Jay, but anyway, goes into this whole thing, and they had a UFO. She'd have a UFO encounter, and actually had some missing time. But it's weird because she had an experience in a library. That went on like this, and it was in May of 67, and she was at Mount Misery area of the Huntington, New York. So a couple of days after the encounter, that something occurred that's, of course, you know, this whole thing, that she had received an odd and disturbing phone call, and this mysterious woman at the other end of the line that did not identify herself to Jane, but instead it said it was a weird metallic sounding like a style, and it instructed Jane to go to her local library, and also not just to go there, but to ask the staff in that library about a specific book on Native American history. And it gets even crazier than that. They say, once you get the book, go sit down at the table, and I want you to turn it to page 42 and read that. Very carefully read over that page. Well, of course, being told that, like anybody else, any of us, the same thing, you're going to be like, okay, that's really odd. I'm down for a mystery, down for a little fun. Let's go check this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's Jane do? Okay, I'm down. Let's go. So she goes to the library. It's about mid-morning, you know, 10 or 11. She gets there. She said she walks in the library, typical library. You got the smell of old books. You know, it's kind of quiet, a little bit of a shuffling noise and all this stuff. But she said that it was
the whole time when she walked in was really odd. Like there was just an odd feeling in the air. Said it was pretty much empty. Like you would think there'd be a few people still in there. This is what's odd about it. There was only Jane and the librarian there. And she said when she got into it, you know, you're used to that hustle and bustle. Like I'm talking about just, you know, you don't hear the noise of chatter, but you can hear the noise of movement. You know, you just hear. No, she said there was a vacuum-like silence. Like somebody had sealed that library in total silence. So Jane, go ahead, walk up. She said, as for the librarian, they were, you know, John asked her. She says it was only like a woman in black. She said her hair was black. Her eyes were very black. The librarian's skin was olive, and she wore a black-colored outfit. Strangely enough, she said that she's dressed in an old-fashioned suit. And this is what Jane actually said. Like something out of the 1940s. Had a long skirt, broad shoulders, and a flat-looking old shoes. So you're picturing like a very oddly dressed librarian.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't belong. Now, Jane, of course, said the strangest thing of all was that this woman handed her from under the desk a copy of the book that she had been sent there to find. The woman pulls it out and is like, here's your book. She didn't even ask, you know, she's like, hey, what's going on? Bump, here you go. Well, of course, Jane's a little freaked out, you know, needless to say. So determined at this time to find out exactly what was going on, she took the seat right there, sat down, opened the book to page 42. She said, as she did, the writing on the page changed from large to small and back again several times, like the font adjusting on your phone. And she said, rather amazingly, the writing then did something else. It morphed what she said was into a message. And she says she's able to remember the entire message word for word. And she believes that it was subliminally implanted into her. So she wrote it down. And this is what the message said. Good morning, friend. You have been selected for many reasons. One is that you are advanced in auto-suggestion. Through this science, we will make contact. I have messages concerning Earth and its people. The time is set. Fear not. I am a friend. For reasons best known to ourselves, you must make your contacts known to one reliable person. To break this code is to break contact. Proof shall be given. Notes must be kept of the suggestion state. Be in peace. Now Jane goes on to say that after all that stuff, she stood up, closed the book, turned around to hand it back to the librarian. Librarian's gone. Nobody. Completely, totally silent library. Nobody's in there. Complete room empty. So she just left the book and jetted. Now, what's odd is 1967. Because if you go back to digging around and start looking around into these things, you find out that there was a lot of stuff happening in 1967 that had to do with men in black sightings. It was a woman that reported for the local paper up there during the Point Pleasant. She visited Point Pleasant. She was reporting about the Mothman. Her name was Mary Hyrie. And she actually talked about how she was in an office and there was a very small black-haired man with what she called hypnotic eyes in a thin, short-sleeved shirt, but very thick shoes that was there that had visited her office after she's making these reports. So she was like, instantly, this is very strange. Now, you go, like, now mind you, this is like I told you, this is early in January. Also early in January of 67, there was a family there. The Christensen family from New Jersey, Wildwood to be exact. This family had seen a UFO right before Thanksgiving on the 22nd of November in 1966. And they were, you know, it jumped forward to in January. And so they've seen it in November in 66. In January of 67, they got approached and was interviewed by what they call is the strangest looking man I've ever seen. That he was wearing a thin black coat. And he introduced himself, is he ready for this? Tiny. He introduced himself as Tiny from the Missing Heirs Bureau. And they say that he spoke in a very high-pitched, tiny voice. And he used clipped words and phrases like he was a computer. And it says that almost like he were reciting everything from memory. They also said the odd thing was that he had on black trousers, of course not strange for that time, but that they were too short and that they could see long, thick green wire attached to the inside of his leg and it came up out of his socks and then disappeared under his trousers. So they didn't even know what the heck that was. But it doesn't stop there, folks. In the spring of 67, from here in Texas, there was a woman named Carol Wayne Watts and she had encountered what she said was a flying saucer that was landed. And it was on March, the end of March, March 31st there. And this right here said that on occasion they'd taken photos of it. failed a lie detector test. Later told Robert Lofton of the University of Colorado that while driving to Amarillo to take the test, Carroll was stopped to help a woman driver in apparent distress and was knocked down from behind, and two men in dark business suits said that if Carroll passed the test, he'd be shot. Yeah, so just out of the blue found you, right?
Yeah.
Boom. March of 67, Shane Kurtz was in her last year at Westmoreland High in New York State, was walking to school when she was approached by a short man with slanted eyes, and she said a slight Oriental accent. He knew her name and asked her very peculiar questions, such as, what is volleyball and basketball? He offered to take her for a car ride on her lunch hour. She just basically ended the conversation and said, well, it was nice meeting you. Turned to walk away, turned again, and the man had vanished. Looked around, he ain't there anymore. She says a month later, she was there in a nearby store when she noticed an albino man in a long black overcoat, and he was just standing there staring at her. Now, she goes on to say that the following year after that, almost to the date, she saw a UFO and believed later that that UFO had actually abducted her. So almost like they had shown up and picked her out and said, all right, now you're going with us. You go into early April in 1967 in Ohio. There was a farmer there, says he saw a big red and white glowing thing sitting in a field there near his barn. And he goes on to say that when he investigated it, that it left a circle of scorched earth about 30 feet. Yeah.
Hmm.
He says that the circuit box in the barn, breaker box, had burned out. Now, he says the next day, two men from what he said they supposedly came from the electric company turned up and was fussed about with the transformer, and get a load of this, on the pole by the road. Said they did not have an electrical truck, just a panel truck. And he says this, they were foreigners, Japanese or something, and they weren't very friendly, but they were dressed in ordinary overalls. He says they had on funny shoes with very thick rubber soles. And a week later, he received a telephone call that sounded like a neighbor who warned him about a crazy man with a beard. Yeah. He says 10 minutes later, bearded, as usual, said was unusual for that part of Ohio at the time. Guess who shows up? John Keel. John Keel shows up. So this guy told him to get on out of there. The guy that owned the house that had seen all this stuff said, get out of here. He's later on. He says he goes to talk to that neighbor.
Uh-huh.
And the neighbor says, I never called you. It's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So it was like maybe these guys had seen and knew John was coming to investigate and had this guy just tell John off for him. Yeah. You follow me?
Yeah, I'm following you.
How wild is that? But now we go back in, of course, to the Mount Misery there at the summit. There was a woman lived there on Long Island. There'd been apparently a lot of UFO sightings in that area. And one time she was actually visited by what she said were four men with high cheekbones and red faces who said that my land belonged to their tribe. Says they had no car. Now, get a load of this. She said that they must have walked up a muddy hill there, of course, to get to where she lived. But she said their shoes were spotless and clean. Now, she says the same week, a woman with striking white hair claiming to represent a local newspaper asked her a number of personal questions about the background of her family. She kind of felt uneasy about it. And after it was all over, she called the newspaper up and the newspaper said, we don't have anybody working here that fits that description. We've never had anybody here like that. So we get into October of 67. And there is a Mrs. B of Mimosa there in San Luis Valley, Colorado. And they had, of course, now, you does that sound familiar? You start talking about San Luis, and in that valley, there's a lot of cattle mutilations take place in that area.
You're right.
That's a big hot spot there.
Yeah.
She had actually made a painting of a crescent-shaped UFO that she said that she had seen and was later visited by a man who told her this, I cannot read, but mention any book in any library, and I will be able to tell you its content. And he went on to say that humans waste too much time and energy on food when it could all be so easily taken from the atmosphere. After making that, he insisted on buying Miss B's paintings. So she set an extremely high price, right?
Right.
To which he replied, I have no money. And then she says that he got in a car, and on that car there was Arizona plates. And then she said several months later, police said that they could not even trace the plates. She wrote all that down, turns it all in. They're like, look, there's no way. We don't have no idea where those plates came from. There's nothing to it, which I thought that's a little odd there in itself. So there are several in 67 of these strange. I don't know why it's like that was a hot time of year. You start looking through all this. There's some really wild stuff goes on in the year of 1967. But it's not just here. that they have these strange things. Now, of course, this isn't, you know, back in 67. This is more, you know, common time now. If I mention Brent Swanser, a lot of you may know him, a lot of you may not, but Brent's a blogger from Mysterious Universe. And he actually wrote a blog and reported on an interview that he did with a fellow in Japan that actually had an encounter with an MIB there. Now, he spoke about a young man he knew, and he calls this young man Kazu. And this is a personal account that happened to a close friend of Kazu's. And it says it happens that this friend of his had made a lot of sightings of UFOs above Meiji Shrine. And apparently it's a very popular shrine in the center of Tokyo. Now, I probably butchered that pronunciation, so I'm sure there's going to be hundreds of y'all send me emails. It always happens. But just so it's a hotspot for UFO sightings, even though it's in an urban setting. So a lot of people report seeing that, which is odd because there's a lot of shrines have a lot of UFO sightings, which has always been kind of strange. Something else we might want to look into. But anyway, Brent reports that Kazu's friend recorded several of these incidences of UFOs all around the shrine. And it was very interesting, of course, to Brent and all that. So, you know, they're going on. Turns out that his friend says, and Brent calls him Nobu, said he found himself on a bus late one night coming home from an office, from working, right? So it's ladies mm-hmm. riding the bus. That's always seems like when you have something wacky, right?
Yeah.
You always have like bad news go down, bad things go down, riding a bus late at night. But he said that at this time, this bus was practically empty, like nobody. He said, but that at one stop, an elderly gentleman dressed in all black got on board. Says that Nobu thought nothing of it at first. Said, but he did think it was very strange that the stranger chose to sit in the seats directly across the aisle from him. So Nobu's sitting down right across the aisle. This old man sits down. Despite the fact he's like that, it was almost empty. Like the bus is, you know, you just take your pick. Now, he did say this, though, that as the bus made its way along down through there, that this old man was very fidgety. Said he couldn't seem to keep his hand still. So he's just constantly moving, just, you know, shifting, constantly shifting, which I'm sort of thinking, well, if he's maybe he's in pain, you know, maybe his back hurts, maybe his leg hurts. You don't know. He's an elderly fellow. But he also said that he noticed the reflection in the window and that whoever it was kept talking continually in peaks. You know, I'm sorry, kept looking his way, kept, you know, would watch him in the reflection and then look whenever he wasn't looking. So basically, Nobu turns to his side and he's looking in the like he's looking out the window. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And he's seeing this old man's reflection. And every time this old man's just kind of looking at him constantly, which still doesn't tell me a whole lot. But it does say this, that after several stops, Nobu started to become more and more uneasy about this guy. So he said he finally got the courage up, so he turned and made eye contact, looking right at him. But he says this, that on very careful inspection, that he could tell that the stranger was wearing a black, loose-fitting suit, oversized black leather briefcase on his lap, and that there was an object he was messing with. But he said this, that he had very unusually long, thin fingers working at a lock like he was trying to open it, but he didn't know how to open it, and that the man had on a hat. And he said it wasn't a big fancy fedora or anything, but it was still somewhat like an old boiler hat. Now, we've talked about these guys, you know, like these derbies or bowler hats or whatnot. But he says that's very odd to see these style hats in Japan. He said, but what was odd enough was that the odder was that the man was profusely sweating, even though it wasn't even hot out, and that his sweat seemed to be causing some sort of streaking on his skin. So I'm thinking about, like, you know, when they got on makeup and they're sweating and they're
right.
When women cry, like at a funeral, a woman's got her makeup on and you see all those streaks. That's what's rolling down this fella's skin. He said it was not described as being so much a disguise coming off or anything, so much as it one might expect to see a heavily made up woman right there. So see, they were even talking about the makeup thing, is it's almost like he's trying to cover up what he actually looks like. He said, but underneath where that makeup, where those the sweating streaks were going,
mm-hmm.
you could see a light, pale skin. So it's almost like it's washing away and you can tell it's makeup on this guy. He said, look, man, that's not quite as alarming enough. No reason to real panic. But he said it got Nobu to thinking about, well, it's probably better that I just get off. So he said this vehicle came up at the next stop, you know. Nobu gets up and jumps off the bus. He says that the black-suited man in the seat across the aisle from him for a moment looked up with a distinct look of surprise, as like he wasn't expecting it, like he may have known where Nobu was going, so he's going to go with him. And when he made this change, well, it changed the timeline, right? You're like, wait, what happened? He said the man's features were very well described as an old man and a baby all at the same time. So he's looking right at him, when he walks by. Now, it's odd that he says an old man and a baby. I don't know what that even means. But he said that he brushed past him to exit, and he said he could hear the briefcase tumble to the floor. He said, which for some reason spooked him, and it made him really hustle to get off the bus. He said, I wasn't looking back. I didn't want to see what could have possibly been going on in case the old man was coming. He said, but as the bus drove off, he turned to look to the window. The old man wasn't there. The window where he was sitting, he was gone. Now, Nobu says that, you know, it's very easy to say that maybe he just dropped the briefcase and he had been over to pick it up at the time the bus was leaving. And, you know, maybe that's the reason I didn't see him.
Right.
You know, we don't really know. But it does sound very strange that he said that he could tell it looked like the guy had extremely long fingers and it looked like makeup was running. Like, what would that be from? And why would the guy be so fidgety? And why would the guy sit across from you? You ever been standing at a urinal and the guy comes and stands at the urinal right next to you?
Yeah.
It's man code. You leave a gap in between, right?
Yeah, it always kind of creeps me out.
It kind of creeps me out. You're like, yeah, eyes on your own work, sir. You know, it just kind of freaks me out for a second. But this is something that I want to leave y'all all with. And it's a story about women in black. Now, most of you heard one of the last episodes where I discussed that a woman had shared about her husband's encounter with a porcelain-skinned, dark-haired woman in his dreams. And she later found out that this woman had basically attached herself to his family, starting with his great-grandfather. Now, the family was Jewish. You know, the whole family also Jewish. So she wondered if that had anything to do with it. Well, that kind of got me thinking, because I remembered later on, after, you know, doing that whole thing, sitting around the house, about a story told by Albert Bender. Now, Albert Bender, who wrote the book Flying Saucers and Three Men in 1962, he tells this story that in 1933, while he was just a child, Bender's mother told him this story of a family ghost that was definitely a woman in black, that the story itself revolved around his second cousin, who, while only 6 years of age, moved into a creepy old house with his family. That house actually sat adjacent to, and this is a little unsettling, an old abandoned mine shaft. So, instantly, you know, that's a creepy place to start with. You know, always you think back to, I don't know why, I have no idea why. But he said that it was always there. He said you could hear standing out, of course, this is a tale, that you could hear standing out, the earth shifting, you could hear like some creaking sounds and the timbers making noise down on the ground. Said that there was a lot of rats down in that old, you know, the mine shaft. Bats, multitudes of bats lived down in there. But he said that in which they say years earlier, there was a young woman who was very upset and very depressed that she had gone in there and cut her own throat and then threw herself off into one of the mine shafts, and that her body was finally recovered. And it was, of course, you know, basically just destroyed shell of what she was, and that it was taken into the house to where Albert Bender's cousin had lived as a young boy, but it had been taken there before being buried in the graveyard right there, before they come and got her, that the people who lived there had found her. And of course, you know, the woman, this is what Bender talked about, was said to have been a witch, that they believed she was a witch. And this is one of the quotes, says that lived alone with a great many cats, and she was said to prowl about only at night. Now, Bender also writes in there that this, my cousin wore a coin on an unbroken chain around his neck constantly, even to bed. And after having lived in the house a few months, his parents noticed his health was failing. He would not eat and claimed he saw a lady in black in his bedroom at night. Now, of course, they thought it was all nonsense and that he was only dreaming, but soon they began to have sleepless nights when the boy would scream out in his sleep and they would find it necessary to go and comfort him. Now, of course, in the early hours one night, this was all going on early one morning, you know, Albert's cousin awoke the whole family. And they said that he was sitting in his room wailing like a banshee, just going crazy. And he said his parents noticed that the coin had been unhooked from the chain and was positioned on the pillow. Now, Albert goes on to say that the boy told his mother and father that the lady in black was trying to choke him and take his coin away from him. Now, they call in the local doctor. They're like, well, we're going to have to get this boy checked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to know what's going on. So the doctor said, it's nothing but nightmares. That's it. He's an overactive imagination. He's a young child. He's just having some nightmares. But they said that it wasn't much long after that that the doctor was proven to be very, very wrong. They said, with no end in sight to these nightmares, the parents both said, we know what we'll do. We'll sleep in the boy's room until he kind of calms down, right? We'll all sleep in there together. It'll help him adjust. Well, apparently on the fourth night of them sleeping in there, they were all woken up by, this is what they say, a menacing and horrific sight. A hooded female form dressed in black with an anemic-looking skin. So we're talking a white porcelain-like skin, right? Black hair, hooded, that slowly glided across the room right in the direction of the boy. Now, mind you, in the story that I talked about with the woman and her husband, it did the same thing. Remember they said that she glided and her movement didn't follow the movement of her limbs, correct?
Yeah.
Remember all that? That's what they're talking about here. They said this, that this bony hand moved slowly down to grasp the coin. They said at this point, the boy's father lit a candle and pushed it up into the face of this woman, this woman in black. Now, Albert says this, that they could only see a pale, chalky white face staring at them. And in an instant, it was like an old hag. She was gone. But here's what's wild. The coin was gone also. That's the story that he tells. Like, it was gone. Well, of course, the family leaves the house. They say within a week, the family's like, look, the boy wasn't lying. He's traumatized. Pack your stuff. Get your purse. We're leaving. And that's pretty much what they did. But here's the odd thing. The minute they got him out of there, they said the boy's health returned. Every bit of it. He was feeling great.
Isn't that strange?
Isn't that strange? Yes. So, that tied in almost directly with the exact same thing, except you remember with the woman talking about this and her husband, it was sexually gratifying. My thing is this. Are they only good spirits while they're getting their way? Now, what was this evil one showing up for? Is it the old hag? You had brought up the old hag. What? Where did this woman come from? You know, this whole thing. But there's another story, and I've touched on it a little bit, but this is very odd. I'm going to just talk about this for a second. You remember, you think back, we've discussed this, is during the Vietnam War, at the height of it, all this was going on that was in Da Nang there in the South Central Vietnam, on the coast there. This took place in August of 1969. So just 2 years after the 67 sightings of all the men in black, this is over in Vietnam, there was a fellow named Earl Morrison. And him and a bunch of his buddies had a problem that went down one night. And I believe we've discussed this. But anyway, late one night, there was some men, they were on guard duty. They were, you know, of course, looking out for the enemy at the time. About 1:30 in the morning, and they said everything changed. And they said there was an eerie form made its presence known there to the 1st Marine Division there in the U.S. And they were, of course, very, very reluctant to speak out about this publicly. But Morrison finally started talking about it. And in 1972, he comes forward and tells what happened. This is what he says. We saw what looked like wing, like on a bat, only it was gigantic compared to a regular bat. And after we got close enough, we could see it looked like a woman.
Yeah, I remember this one.
They said she was naked, she was black, her skin was black, her body was black, the wings were black, everything was black, but it had a glow to it, a greenish cast of a glow to her figure, and that she started going over them. Remember, and they said they didn't hear anything. She was right above them. He said she was maybe 6 or 7 foot above them, circling. Said we watched her go straight up over the top of us, made no noise flapping her wings, and she blotted out the moon once. That's how close she was. So she goes over, and she's right there with them. And they said it looked pitch black, but they could still see her definition because there was an outline, a haze. And he said it actually was started getting bright on the outside edge. Said she started going past us straight towards the encampment where they all had come from. And they said she had gone about 10 feet away from them, and that's when they started hearing her wings flap, like regular wings flapping. And she said she just started flying off, and they actually stood there and could see her for a while flying off. Now, how wild is that? Remember, now this is, we're talking about this Batwoman now. So right. You could say it's a woman in black, but could this have been something along the lines of what these women, just because they didn't see the wings didn't mean they didn't have them.
That's right.
But there was something else even stranger that I found that, it's very weird because you could go down the path of Manchurian Candidate. You could go down the path of conspiracy theory that has to do with the U.S. government, the things that were going on, all because of one name I'm going to mention, Richard Nixon. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman named Shirley Cromer Marti, and she was, of course, a mother of three, and she had a security clearance there in the Florida White House. All right. And she, October 23rd, 1971, this is what was actually talked about. A part-time housekeeper at President Nixon's Key Biscayne retreat was terrified when she was put what she said was in a hypnotic daze by a stranger who told her to shoplift not one, not two, but four dresses. Now, they talk about this, Miss Cromartie, and she actually pled no contest to this and was given a suspended sentence because law officers and psychiatrists both testified that they believed she was telling the truth and because of her security clearance. But this is what she says, that a mysterious woman met with her in a parking lot and asked if she had the time and then ordered her to shoplift items and bring them to her. Now, of course, the people the press was reporting on this said that these high levels of strangers, it got even crazier. Miss Cromartie testifies that she fell into a daze when the young woman released a jasmine-like scent from her hand, and that she added that, "I just sort of lost my will. It was a terrifying experience." And that she, apparently the year before, is when she had joined the house cleaning staff and had that whole deal. Here's what's wild. The FBI does the background checks for that. So they're not just going to let anybody in there. So the FBI, one of the agents, like, look, I'm in charge of this. Leo McLaren said, look, I'm in charge of this. And she is clean as they come. We dug in deep. Of course, you know, you got to, you know, imagine the deep in the 70s or whatnot. But we've dug in deep. This is what we found. The psychiatrist also said this. We found that she could be hypnotized quickly and easily and believed herself that she was telling the truth. But she even said, it wasn't the same when he hypnotized me because I couldn't remember anything afterwards. Whatever the young woman did to me, it was like I was being controlled in a sleepwalk state. So I was awake.
She sprayed her in the face with
a jasmine something. She released a jasmine type smell. But this is what's really strange. The woman, they go, look, can you describe this woman? Attractive, young, and was wearing a wig. Now, there's a lot of, you can go back and forth. There's been a lot of people talk about she was wearing black clothing. They didn't say the black skin, but there is a few places, and it's hard to find, of course, what's nailed down and all this because some, you know, they add to it.
Right.
But some of them said that she had very white, porcelain-like skin and high cheekbones and was very small in frame. So it led people to say, well, was it really a woman or was it a man in black wearing a wig dressed as a woman? Because they're talking about, you know, you're like, there's a lot of different conjecture that goes around this whole thing. Because then you're looking at, what was it? Because like I said, the easiest way to get to them, because that's when I brought up the Manchurian Candidate. But you remember we did a thing about the zombie powder a long time ago when they had that stuff where they could get, and you could basically, you could give it to somebody and they would do pretty much whatever you told them to do. And
was, maybe get that from my boys.
Right? Was that something that they think, maybe they were testing it out back then and they were like, well, why not? You know, she's a housekeeper. Let's just try it on her. You know, no, who knows? Maybe we, and I always thought of this when I remember this story. So I was like, well, maybe they tested it on her. And if she wouldn't have gotten caught or wouldn't have come forward and all that, they were going to be like, all right, we're going to do all that. And then we're going to get her to kill President Nixon. You know,
yeah,
I don't know. So what's funny is we get the tales of the men in black seem to be tales of them visiting people that have some sort of encounter with UFOs.
Yep.
Where the women in black don't seem to fit that criteria at all.
Yeah, it seems different.
It seems to be involved in, well, they gave out the messages. Remember, she gave the book to Jay. She gives her the book. She gives out the messages. But it's also, too, she was directing them. So I'm always thinking, too, do the women in black, do they direct the men in black? What's happening there? You know, is it like a wife telling her husband you got to go in there?
Yeah, that's
exactly
what it is. The extraterrestrials have been watching humans for a long time, and they've noticed that wives and girlfriends are constantly bossing around their men. So that's what they've recreated in this scenario, right?
Maybe. But then it goes into, I can't tie it all together because I don't understand how the Jewish family that I reported on has this going on with their great-grandfather of like this old hag, but it's a beautiful woman. Yet she describes almost the exact story, and we've covered a bunch of them. There's a lot of these tales. Now, I do know there's a Welsh vampire that looks something like, I believe, this glowing green account, but it was still an all-black woman, black skin, black bat wings, the whole thing. I guess what I'm always lost at is this. If it is a humanoid or an extraterrestrial or anything like that that's not from here, not from our plane, how do they know genders? Why would they need to know a gender? Why wouldn't it just look like the depiction of angels with no gender? You know, I always think back,
right.
What is the Christopher Walken movie? Prophecy. There's no gender, right? I mean, it's just...
Is that the one with Viggo Mortensen?
Yes, where he plays the devil.
Yeah.
So you think of that, I'm like, why would they need to know? Like, we've talked about UFOs. Why would they have to have all this? So I always think back, why would they need to know gender? Gender doesn't play, if they're not here to breed, why would they need to look like a woman or look like a male if they're just here to take part in what's going on? So it all, it almost makes it seem like it's a tulpa or it's something that, that has always been because it's followed us. It's almost, you know, it's, it actually is on our plane. So I don't know, but I thought these were interesting because they all fit these strange tales. But then you got to realize that when we hear these women in black tales, they don't follow the tales of men in black. So there's really no correlation between the two. I can't find any way to go, yeah, there's women come and show up and ask you questions about UFOs the men do. There's no difference. I mean, yeah, okay, there's no difference. There's no link because they're pale and pasty. Well, that's the only link. I mean, hell, I'm pale and pasty.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if you see a UFO or not. Awesome. Send me some pictures. So I don't know. There's no, but for what I thought it was going into, it's not what I found, not what I pulled out. So I have no clue. I hope y'all enjoyed those stories because if you can find a link or later on, or y'all find some great stories of women in black coming and talking to people. And I don't mean just the regular ones I'm talking, or if you have any experiences of the women in black or of these old or even these young porcelain skinned, dark haired beauties that show up in your dreams or other people have seen or you think you've seen them. expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Please send me the emails, put up there, put Cam in the subject line and put woman in black or Cam WIB because I want to read them, folks. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap this puppy up and get out of y'all's hair. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I love the stories of the MIBs. I don't know why. It's always so interesting to me. And a good friend of our show is a good personal friend of ours, Nick Redfern. He seems to be an authority on a lot of this Men in Black stuff. And in fact, if you go to our show notes, I'll put links to some of his books. I don't know. I just love the stories of the Men in Black, how they always just seem, I don't know, like they look a lot like us, but then they just look not quite right. Like you were mentioning, even in Japan, that the type of fedora hats they were wearing is not really common for that area. They always seem to be fidgeting, like they're here, but they don't really understand what. But they always appear shortly after someone sees a UFO. It really is odd, the whole story, like all of it. You know, and even Dan Aykroyd, we brought it up on before, and I've replayed him saying that he was visited by a Men in Black because he was filming these shows about aliens. So it's incredible. What are you fidgeting there for? What, I see you doing something.
Well, I was laughing because I guess my mother has just now found emojis on her phone. Because now, as we're doing this, my mother is sending me. Now, mind you, remember, folks, like I told you, she lived with me for a while. My mother's now sending me Valentine's emojis. She's 66 years old, and I guess she's just now found this on her phone. Now, it's been, I don't know how long she's had this, years that she's had these phones now, and she's just now, I get a couple of hearts and stuff on her. I'm like, look. So, Mom, if you're listening, don't be texting me crazy emojis while I'm trying to do a show. Crazy old woman, what's going on? Yeah, I'm like, what's happening here? So, I'm going to have to text. I'll be like, I guess you just found the emoji-con stuff coming up. That's awesome.
What I think's funny is it's like history really does repeat itself. Like, basically, Egyptian hieroglyphics, that was emojis.
That's true.
We got away from that and started actually writing letters, and now we're going back to emojis.
You're right.
So everything comes back. You know, like, bell bottoms come back. Hieroglyphics are coming back. I know you go to the movies a lot more than me, but there's some pretty cool movies that I want to see that are coming out. John Wick 2 is out. I have not seen that yet.
I'm going to see that ASAP.
And I want to go see that Great Wall with Matt Damon. Okay. That looks pretty crazy. Have you seen the previews for that?
We're going to go see that. Let's take the boys and go see it.
I want to see that. And I know Luke wants to go see the, what's the one with King Kong?
Skull Island. Yeah, we've already planned on going the early release. We're taking the boys and going.
I cannot.
I've got to be there whenever he sees it, because I want to see the look on the Pukwudgie's face when that thing pops up, because he's going to lose his mind.
He just got a toy today from Japan. It's like some kind of King Ghidorah, which is like a three-headed dragon. Who knows where he finds these things on YouTube.
I don't want to hear about how he finds it by doing research, dork. I'm sitting across from one of the guys that does it. He gets it from you.
No, I don't know any of these characters.
No, but you do a bunch of research. That's why he's learned. I learned it by watching you, Dad. I learned it by watching you.
Yeah, maybe. Well, before we get out of here, I'd like to mention our proud sponsors again. Don't forget blueapron.com/expanded. You go to that and you can sign up for Blue Apron. You can get your fresh meals delivered to your doorstep every week. And we thank them so much for sponsoring our show. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/expanded. Also, I'd like to remind everybody about Gaia.com. There's an interesting series over there that just started. It's called Truth Hunter with Linda Moulton Howe, and there's two episodes out so far. And if you go to Gaia.com right now, you can watch the first episode, Revelations from Alien Encounters, for 100% free. It's about 56 minutes long, so go over there and check it out. And if you like it, you can join Gaia and get access to all their other documentaries, movies, and films. Pretty cool. Cam?
Yeah.
I'm going to be traveling back this week from the mountains, hopefully 100% intact. I'm a little older than the last time I was up in the mountains snowboarding, and hopefully my knee holds up. My right knee's been kind of bothering me, so hopefully that holds up. And I'll be taking some pictures. I'm going to try to stop by the St. James Motel that you just talked about on Elite. And I'm going to try to take some pictures and things like that.
I will be here with a walker for you. So whenever you get out of the car, you can make your way to the house whenever you've had your accident where you've slammed into a tree and you've wet your pants and all that stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be
better
fine.
You'll break a wrist or something like that. You know you're going to be sore. That's
I'll definitely be sore.
You're going to be sore like you've been beat up. That's going to be greatness.
I'm already expecting that to happen. don't forget, folks, if you'd like to share some stories of your own with Expanded Perspectives, you can always email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can always call the show, 817-945-3828. And you can, don't forget, sign up for Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can do that by going to the website, expandedperspectives.com, clicking on the Elite tab and signing up. It's $5 a month. And when you sign up, you get an additional show every Friday, including access to our entire back catalog, over 100 episodes over there, and they are 100% commercial free. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Do you love me? Do you love me?
Wait,
baby.
A little Paul Abdul?
Do you love me? Do you? I've been fooled before. Wouldn't like to get my love caught in the slamming door. How about some information, please?
Straight up now, tell me, do you really want to love me forever? Oh, oh, oh. Am I caught in a hit and run? I remember this song. Straight up now, tell me, is it going to be you and me forever? Oh, oh, oh. Are you just having fun?
Bum, 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 bum.